than we could for America within borders.
If God can forgive you for everything, why can't we do the same to one another?
Be faithful to the commandments.
God's with us, and that he didn't abandon us, he's not punishing us, and that he helps us figure out all these things together. And I think it...
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the Doug Serravo Show, which is brought to you by the Monkey Bar and Grill. Swing on by. Monsignor Joe Curry joins us again on episode 20 of season 7. Monsignor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. You're happy you got Juan Soto.
Yeah, there you go. Can't complain that. Verdugo, we're looking good. Now we just get a pitcher, we'll be great.
Yeah, World Series.
Yeah.
So last time we were here was for Lent. Mm-hmm. Now it's Advent season, the short Advent, Christmas Eve. 11 a.m. Mass, and then we have the Christmas Eve Mass. So let's see if you remember some of your homilies.
Oh, boy.
So one Christmas Eve, you brought a minion out.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, you brought out a red Solo cup.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, I think you brought out a baby doll.
Okay.
You're talking about a baby and how it brings joy to families.
Okay.
Can you reminisce on that homily real quick?
On the baby doll?
Yeah, if you remember that.
I don't. A baby, how can a baby not? A baby is just all hope. It's all potential. You know, you look at a baby, and a baby can be anything. It could be, he or she could be president. They could design the cure for cancer. They could be a baseball player. They're just a bundle of joy and hope. All things are possible.
And I think that's what Christmas means, you know, bring peace to the world, hope to the world. Whereas, with Lent, it was more. We talked more about sacrificing, giving something up, suffering, sorrow. So, what does Christmas mean to you?
Christmas to me, it's family. The importance of family, just being together. It's stories, it's traditions, it's rituals. You know, some people like on Christmas Eve they'll do all the fish in the evening. People have their different routines of what they do in the morning or maybe Christmas Eve. They go to midnight mass. It's just a lot of rituals and a lot of just wonderful things for people to get together or families to get together. It reminds us that, you know, how God's presence is shown to us in so many different ways.
So with Advent, because usually people think Christmas season happens right after Thanksgiving, but mm-hmm. Christmas season starts Christmas Day, December 25th, and then I think it ends January 7th or around there.
Baptism of the Lord.
So how can we bring the news to the world that Christmas, we prepare for Christmas within Advent, but it doesn't end after you open your gifts on Christmas Day?
Well, I think if we just be a people of hope, you know, it's funny that Jesus is born just around the longest night. The shortest day. So Jesus comes into the world and the light starts to increase. And I think that's a thing to remind us to say, look, you know, if we just have some hope, no matter how tough things can be, and if I have Jesus with me, all things are possible. You know, the gospels that we've been listening to these last few weeks just remind us of that, you know, all things are possible.
And I think one of the things we look at as Advent is to prepare for the Lord to come on Christmas Day, his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way for us to get closer to him for Christmas Day? Is it adoration, confession, reading the word?
I'd say all of the above. Somebody once told me the best way for me to pray is the best way for me to pray. So if adoration, surely before the Eucharist, you can't get much better than that. Spending sitting quiet in the morning with your cup of coffee, saying your rosary before you go to bed, listening to Catholic radio when you're driving in the car. They don't have to be like big, overwhelming things. They could just be simple, small steps, inviting the Lord into your life in just even simple ways. And it's amazing how those things have effect if we just give ourselves a chance.
So one of the things I would like to clarify is the Solemnity of the Immaculate Conception. because I think most people believe it's the day where Jesus was conceived in Mary, but I heard that it's actually when Mary was
conceived in her mother.
Conceived in her mother. Why do we celebrate that during the Advent season?
Well, you know what? That is the day that we recognize that Mary being born, her conception is the beginning of everything. When Mary comes onto the scene, it's the beginning of God setting up the world to receive its Savior. So we believe Mary Immaculate Conception means she was born without original sin. So she already, from the moment of her conception, was being prepared for the Lord. So what a great way to think about that as we think about Jesus, as we think about God coming into the world. It starts with just very simple things.
Is that why we use that reading when Gabriel told her that she would bear a son?
You know, it's very confusing. To the point you make, on the Immaculate Conception, we always use the gospel about Jesus' conception. So it does confuse people. But it's just a reminder, Mary was prepared, or Mary was from the very beginning being prepared to receive the Lord, to, you know, with her great yes when she was a young girl to the Lord, and the difference that made for all of us.
So with Lent, it's about giving something up. Could be candy, whatever it may be, alcohol. Christmas, the Christmas season, the Advent season is about giving of gifts, you know, hope, joy, whatever it may be. So as Catholics, how can we use our faith to give to other people that does not include giving presents?
So I don't know if that I would say, surely we give, but I think it's focus. It's focus on why, like, what are we doing? So if I give somebody a really nice gift, what is it? It's not the gift. It's my love for them or their love for me. Those are the things you want to focus on. And hopefully Advent is a time for us to start to think about, like, you know, what is important to me? And if I, you know, as I'm getting older, you know, before I might have said I would like this or this for Christmas, you know, just sitting with my family at dinner and being together with them becomes more and more important to me. And that, you know, that's probably the greatest gift. And then to be able to celebrate Mass and to be able to recognize the gift that Jesus is, I start to appreciate more and more how wonderful those things are.
So within Advent, when you have a homily, what's the message you look to give to people during this time?
This year, what we've done in our church here is there's deacons and priests. So one of us preaches at all the Masses every week, so that everybody hears the same thing. So these last 2 years, because we're in the year of the Eucharistic revival, these 3 years, so we're in the second year of that, we've been talking about the Eucharist. So the first week we talked about and the Eucharistic revival has four pillars that calls them. First one is a personal encounter with Jesus. Second one is growing in your devotion. The next one is deepening your formation, like you continue to learn. And then the fourth one is talking about missionary sending, that you're sent. Your faith was given to you, not just for you, but for others. So those are the four points that we've been talking about or focusing on as we prepare. It's kind of like looking at the Eucharist as a way to do the very things we were talking about, to draw closer to God, to be more focused on his presence in you and the difference that makes or could make in what you choose.
So we talk about the season of hope, the season of peace. Mm-hmm. What if someone doesn't have hope? They don't feel peace, whether it's in their personal life or they see wars on TV, you know, injustice, whatever it may be. Yeah. How can we spread that message that there is still peace, there is still hope, there can still be joy, no matter what goes on throughout the world?
Well, and so there are times too, the first time at Christmas after the death of someone, the loss of somebody, those are really hard times, they're really hard Christmases. And how do I get hope? I think it's about surrender for me to say, you know what, in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first three steps talk about, and this is a summary, a very summary of them, a brief one, is I realize I can't do it. I recognize that God can. So I let him. So, you know, when things are so overwhelming, I realize I don't have any control over this, or I'm feeling overwhelmed by the loss of somebody or battles or wars. And I know that God can do something with this. So you know what? I can't. I've tried, but I can't. So I just have to keep turning to him, inviting him into my life to give me hope through all the things we talked about, the Eucharist, prayer, quiet time with him, reading the Bible.
So one of the things I like to do Friday nights is, if I get there, is adoration at St. Ambrose in Old Bridge. Mm-hmm. And it is peaceful, just being you and the Lord. So how can we use that as a time? Could we use that as prayer, reflection, to get the peace that we may want in our lives?
So, you know, I think that there was a man when I was growing up who would sit in the church. And he never bought a rosary. He never bought a prayer book. And my pastor one time asked him, like, what do you do here? And the man just pointed to the tabernacle and said, I look at him and he looks at me. So I think it's just, you know, just kind of quieting myself, just allowing myself to be in God's presence. And I don't know that I have to do anything. You know, sometimes it feels good to pray, to talk. Sometimes it just feels good just to sit and let God look at me, let God see me. So it doesn't, I think it kind of goes with whatever you're feeling. Sometimes it feels good to speak. Sometimes it feels good just to be quiet.
So one of the things that I think about is, you know, a lot of people should be going to confession.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they may feel like they don't want to, they're embarrassed, they're afraid. And I like to tell people that God won't judge you.
Mm-hmm.
God's not going to, we're all sinners. No one's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you tell someone? Because I try to tell them, you know, God doesn't judge you. So just the same thing. But what would you tell someone as a priest that's afraid to go to confession, doesn't want to go? What would you tell them to give them that peace in their heart and in their soul?
Well, I guess I really truly believe that forgiveness is the ultimate freedom. If I really want to be free of whatever it is, that thing that is holding over me, that thing that I'm struggling with, the only way I could ever be free of it is through forgiveness. And confession is just a really, really powerful way to do that, where I go and I get the grace of the sacrament. I have somebody tell me that I'm forgiven. There's wonderful things about that. And, you know, I have seen people's lives changed because of that. So to me, it's all about freedom. It's that when I allow forgiveness in my life, I'm free. I'm free in a way. If I hold on to things or I don't allow forgiveness to happen in my life, I become a slave almost to those things.
So if God forgives us, why do you think people are hard to forgive one another?
I think the hardest person to forgive is ourselves. That's normally the hardest one, to see that, you know, people will say, I'm not worthy, or, you know, if God only knew, well, God does know your heart. And I think if we just remember, Jesus died, you know, sister told me when I was little that Jesus died on the cross for my sins and that he died to take all of them away. And so it's almost arrogant of me to think that he died for all my sins or all the sins of the whole world except for this. Like he won't forgive this. And it's like, wow, who am I to think that I could do something that God can't fix or forgive or give hope to?
So this conversation gets a little bit interesting because Jesus came into the world to bring peace. He's the savior of the world. How come in his later life, people started to hate his message where they wanted to crucify him?
So what Jesus started doing is Jesus started referring to himself as God's son. He put himself on a par with God. And that was really, really hard. They considered blasphemy, that nobody was equal to God. And that the Jewish people wouldn't even say, they wrote the letters of his name, but they would never say the name. They would say Lord or Adonai, but they would never speak God's name. And then Jesus, referring to him using a Hebrew word for like daddy, Abba. So they became very, very, very upset about that. He was talking to the rulers of the day. He was telling the rulers, or he told the people, you know, all the rulers do everything they say, but don't do anything they do. They teach the right things, but they don't follow them themselves.
Is that why sometimes the world, or politically, or pop culture, mocks the Christian faith?
It could be. You know what? We stand for something. We have things that are right and are wrong. And people don't like to hear that. We'll say that there, you know, you can't have freedom without boundaries, without parameters. Freedom without parameters or boundaries is chaos. And that's one of the things God came to help or to fix. So freedom is more than just doing what I want to do. That's being just a slave to my passions or being a slave to whatever somebody else says. Freedom is about me being able to say yes or no to things, but having some belief that there are things that are right and wrong.
So one of my favorite songs is O Come All Ye Faithful. Mm-hmm. What would a song like that mean to the world in today's world? What would that song mean to the world throughout everything that's going on?
Well, I think, so this Holy Father, one of the things he says is everybody has to come to the table. And it's not about being worthy. And maybe people disagree with each other, but if we can come to the table and we can talk, that's how hope starts. So that whole come all ye faithful to say, look, if everybody could come together, even if they disagree, but still be able to speak to each other and not hate each other or not totally shut off each other, but to say, you know, okay, tell me why you believe that. I totally disagree with what you say, but can you help me understand why you feel that way? And can I tell you why I feel this way? It might not change you, but you'll have a different appreciation for what the other person thinks. And I think be able to respect them.
Why do you think that's hard for people to do? Even as Catholics, people of faith, they don't want to have that civil conversation. They don't want to forgive one another when Christ himself said to love your enemies, love your neighbor as, what did he say?
As yourself.
As yourself, that's right. Yeah. Why is that hard for the world today?
I think people really do want to have those conversations. I think what has happened, we've made it seem like you have to choose sides. And once you choose a side, you can't ever be with the other side. You can't ever work with the other side or talk with or listen to the other side. We just have to relearn how to do that. And we've bought into a lie there that, boy, if we just listen to one another, if we talk to one another, that's the way any issue or any disagreement, even in the church, has been resolved. By just people and sometimes arguing, but just talking it out, figuring things out. And sometimes it took a long time for that to happen, but I don't know any other way other than that. And I think people really do want that, but we just have to relearn how to do it.
Because with me, I try to bring that into certain conversations. Mm-hmm. Like if someone gets innocently killed, I bring up the point, well, in the Ten Commandments, it says you shall not kill. Mm-hmm. And if we follow what God wants for us, if we follow God's plan, God's ideas for our lives, none of these things would happen. But that's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. And then people come to me and say, this has nothing to do with religion. This has nothing to do with God, blah, blah, blah. How can we continue to spread the word despite the backlash we may receive from it?
Just living it. There was a writer, his name was Edward Guest. He said, I would rather see a good sermon than hear one. St. Francis said, you know, preach about the Lord always, and when necessary, use words. I think it's just living it. It's just being, allowing yourself to be mocked or allowing yourself to be people to say mean things or bad things about you and saying, well, you know, that's okay. I don't believe what you're saying or I don't have to embrace what you're saying, but all right. But you are not going to get me to respond in kind back to you again. I will not do that. And I think if we choose not to do that, if we choose to be the masters of our own reaction or our own actions, that has an effect.
Because if you look at the Christmas season, it seems like people get along, people are having a good time, they have parties, Christmas parties, gatherings. Mm-hmm. You know, even in traffic, no one's cursing at you, no one's cutting you off. They're like, go ahead, mm-hmm. You can go. So how can we have this Christmas Advent season through our ordinary time?
It's a choice. I think you just choose to say, I will do my best to live what I believe. I will do my best to live this peace, this joy, this hope. And sometimes I don't necessarily feel it, but I still choose to live it. I still choose. Maybe I'm angry at somebody. Maybe they've hurt me. But I choose not to be mean back to them. I choose that. It's hard. But I think that's how it happens. People just choose to be good. People choose to have hope. And they're not going to let. So maybe they're saying, I'm not going to watch the news anymore. Or I'm not going to put myself in a position where I am sucked into all these things. And people will say, well, then you're being naive. No, I still can get my news, but I'm getting my news in a way that's not tainted by somebody else's opinion or what somebody else thinks or how it should be. And I'm trying to live my life the same way. I'm surrounding myself with people who have hope.
Because if you remember, well, we weren't there when Jesus came and was born. They were all excited to go see him. You had the three kings. You had people bring gifts. But in today's world, people jump out to, like, the celebrities. They jump out to politicians, athletes. If Christ came down today, do you think people would recognize it? And how can we get more people to gravitate towards the Lord rather than people that don't really want the best interest for our lives?
So I think Jesus is present today. And if the people didn't recognize him then, I don't think people would. If you're not looking to see something that's good, you're not going to see it. If you're just looking for someone who's really popular, who's really handsome or pretty, or those aren't the people that Jesus chose, first of all. I think Jesus puts himself out there. I think he touches our hearts, so the stuff makes sense. But I think people are just afraid. What are people going to say if I tell them I go to church? Or what are people going to say if I tell them I believe in this or I think this is right or wrong? I don't have to be mean about it. What are they going to say? So I just don't. And then I feel different when I start to do positive things. I feel different. I feel better about myself, about the world, even with all the craziness going on.
So wouldn't you say it's more important to focus on our souls to get to heaven rather than continuously trying to help other people to get there that may not want to hear God's word?
So we are all responsible to get our own souls to heaven. That's one of our big jobs. I think, though, that as we start to do it, it just happens for other people. We become attractive and people ask us, like, why are you so happy? Or how can you have hope when all these bad things are happening? So I think it just happens. I think you start to show yourself as a believer and it has effect.
Because I do notice that if someone's happy, they notice, oh, you seem happy, what's going on? And then you can tell them.
It's not just ha-ha happy, but you know that they're kind of at peace with themselves. They're not perfect. They have their own faults, but they're kind of okay with that. And they're all kind of okay with other people's faults or limits. But they also have the ability most of the time to see people's gifts. They see what people are good at.
So last time we did the meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to look at what December 13 has for us.
St. Lucy.
and then I'm going to read it, and then I'll ask you the question, and then you'll give me your thoughts on it. So this says, December 13th, stubborn agenda. Behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I shall be perfected. Luke 13:32. This was the message Jesus wanted the Pharisees to relate to King Herod. The sly fox had divorced his first wife because he wanted Herodias, who had formerly been married to his half-brother, Herod II. Charles Spurgeon said of him, he was a man of dissolute habits and frivolous mind. He was very much under the sway of a wicked woman who destroyed any little good that there might have been in him. He was a lover of pleasure, a lover of himself, depraved, weak, and trifling to the last degree. I almost object to call him a man, therefore let him only be called Tererach. Instead of running from Herod, Jesus sent him a mission statement. Nothing was going to stop him. He was trampling over the enemy, healing the sick, and defeating death. We need to adopt a similar attitude. We have a gospel that must be preached to dying sinners, and neither a demon nor king should be able to stop us from fulfilling the Great Commission. So the soul search is, what are we doing today to fulfill that mission?
So I would think you have two significant people that are put before you with two different life focuses or life choices. You have Herod, whose choice was to do whatever it is that made him feel good or made people happy with him or that he liked to do. And it brought him nothing but discouragement. It didn't bring him, might have given momentary happiness, but it didn't bring him any joy or peace. You get Jesus, who pretty much didn't ask for a lot of things, but he kind of just taught about, you know, I always want to be right with God, my Father. Like, that's the thing that's most important to me. I want to talk about that to other people. He didn't always do things to be happy. He did things to help other people or to share that how important it was that what he had with his Father with other people. And that brought Jesus peace. That brought Jesus the ability to do things that I bet you he never even thought he could do in standing up to people. And in the end, to accepting crucifixion. Those are pretty powerful things, but you'd have to be pretty good with God and with yourself to be able to do that. So I think it's a matter of looking. So which one do I want to be? Do I just want to, you know, do whatever I think is right and, or not right, but whatever I think makes me happy, whatever my desires are, or do I want to just stand with, I want to be right with my Father. I want to be right with God.
So with everything we spoke about, for someone that may lack faith in a season of hope and joy and peace, what would your last message be to them moving forward in the world today?
Two things. The most common used phrase in all of the Bible is do not be afraid. And then I think the fact you're not alone. I think those two things, do not be afraid and you're not alone. And somehow to, whether it's surrender, whether it's prayer, whether it's just coming before some kind of higher power and saying, you know what, if I can just do this, that's going to make a difference. And I'm going to trust that that's going to somehow make a difference. So I think to me, you know, I'm not going to be afraid, or if I am afraid, I'm not going to let a fear stop me from doing something. And then I'm going to just look for the Lord. I'm just going to try and find him to remind myself that I'm not alone.
So last time we were here, we did predictions of our World Series match. You were Yankees Dodgers and I was Phillies Guardians.
Okay.
So we were both a little bit close. Guardians missed the playoffs. Phillies were almost there, but they blew a 3-2 lead. Mm-hmm. Yankees missed the playoffs. So, and then the Dodgers got Ohtani, so we'll see where that goes.
Well, I don't think they're still talking about San Francisco trying to court him still.
Yeah, and I think they just got that guy, the center fielder, Lee.
Okay.
Another Japanese star. So, my friends are going to say this is controversial because they know how I feel about the Yankees. Mm-hmm. So, 2024, Where do you see the Yankees going? If everything stays, if everyone stays healthy, everything goes their way, where do you see this Yankees team going?
If we get one more good starter, we could easily make the World Series. Playoffs, without a doubt, but we could do the World Series. And we've got young guys who are hungry, who, are really working to make it happen.
Is that a bias or a real answer?
A bias. It's a bias. I think it's fair. So if I was thinking right now, I'd probably go right back to what I said last year. Yankees Dodgers.
All right. For me, I can't say Tampa Bay because if they're watching this, they're going to be like, oh, you're biased. Uh-huh. You call us biased, but you do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So from the American League, there's two teams that I think could make a run. It's Baltimore.
Absolutely.
I think they proved last year that they have a young team. They have a great farm system. Mm-hmm. Their prospects have came through. Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson. And the other team in the American League, don't want to say it, but I think if everything goes their way with the addition of Juan Soto and maybe another pitcher, I think the Yankees could get there. Mm-hmm. Don't want to say it, but I can see it happening. And in the National League, they did acquire Eduardo Rodriguez, Eugenio Suarez from, I think, Seattle. So I could see the Diamondbacks going back there. Mm-hmm. And if everything goes their way and they stay consistent, I think the Phillies get back there again. So we may see an 0-9 matchup.
There you go.
Monsignor, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on. Episode 20 of Season 7. Maybe we'll see you during Lent.
Very good. Always great to be with you. Thank you.
I appreciate it. It was a great episode. We'll see everybody tomorrow for Dougie and the Boys at 3:15 p.m. See you guys.